Hey guys, welcome back to Serial and Midnights. My name is Heath Holland, and I want to set up the conversation that I'm about to share with you. This is a discussion with Todd Sokolov, the executive director of global brand marketing at Paramount. But it's also important that I tell you that this is in no way affiliated with Paramount. Todd is not here representing Paramount. Todd is here as Todd. Todd is here as a physical media fan and a collector and someone with who just happens to have some really great inside knowledge about how this stuff is made because he's one of the people that's making it. When you see the titles on your shelf, in your own collection or at the store or even in the digital sphere, Todd may have very well had a hand in that. So I'm trying to disassociate Todd from any sort of connection to the studio that he works for. I think we've made that very clear, right? Hopefully that's been very clear. What you're about to see, this was a blast of a conversation. It's just a little bit of how the magic is made, for lack of a better term, how the magic is made with the physical media that we love so much, but it does go into digital as well. Hey, why no 4K? Well, we've talked about it ad nauseum here, but here's another person telling you why no 4K for certain things, and why some things do. Let's not make it just a negative. Here's a positive. Why some things are chosen for 4Ks. We're going to talk about Paramount Presents. We're going to talk about Chinatown. We're going to talk about some really interesting things that can only come out through a conversation like this. Just real nuts and bolts collecting talk. I think it comes through here in this interview that Todd is just at the heart a collector. One of us. So I'm not going to circle back at the end of this interview to do like an end cap or, you know, to wrap it up. So I do want to thank Todd immensely for being here, for being forthright, for being really open with his answers. Listen, I start the interview by saying I don't take it for granted. This is a huge interview, guys. This is a really big deal. And I don't take it for granted that something like this could happen. So huge thanks to Todd. Thanks to you guys for showing up for this interview as well. If you have questions, let's talk about them in the comments below. And maybe Todd or someone else, because you never know who's watching, will be able to weigh in and answer those questions in a future interview. So without further ado, Mr. Todd Sokolov. First of all, I just want to say thank you for being here. I do not take it for granted that someone of your position and your stature would take time to talk to me about physical media and collecting and the fan scene right now. So thank you so much.
Thank you. What a great setup. I mean, I am happy to always talk to fans and collectors because I am one myself. And, you know, it's been very exciting to see a lot of the transparency between in social media, you know, real-time access to everybody's opinions.
It's the best and it's bad. The worst, right?
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But, you know, it's all helpful.
How you talk about being a collector, like how involved are you in what fans are actually saying? You're seeing all the stuff that's being said on a daily basis pretty much, right? And you're pretty active on social media.
Yeah, definitely. I manage product development, which in a not so fancy way of explaining it is juggling a lot of the different priorities around product releases. So, you know, from a studio level, it is a little bit different than, say, indie sub-licensee or producer. They may have a different set of things that drive them. Mm-hmm. But for me, there's a bottom line, right? So it's all based around schedules. You know, are there drafting opportunities? Are there anniversary opportunities and things like that? And I always joke that, you know, fans that are expecting something to come to 4K just have to check when the movie was released. Is there a major anniversary coming out? You know, that's generally what you'll see in the marketplace. But, you know, a lot of those decisions are with my group.
Why are anniversaries such a great opportunity to put out a release? I guess marketing, but is it just like everything lines up?
You know, what's interesting is that especially in the social media world or digital marketing world, you have this organic buzz around remembering something in the pop culture zeitgeist, right? Mm-hmm. And we've seen that happen on a major level with titles that, you know, obviously are going to get some sort of celebration, like The Godfather 50th anniversary, and how can you not? But even titles that are just a little bit more culty or in the weeds, you know, there's buzz. We've seen buzz in the past couple of weeks around Adventureland, you know, which is in our Miramax catalog. And it's always nice to see that sort of organic celebration around it. And if we can drive a little bit of that and be celebratory, then, you know, it makes it even better. And it's not always the driver, right? You know, I mean, we may be working on a restoration. We may have a title that people have been asking for years that finally is, you know, been dusted off, and we want to get it out there. And that's often the case with a lot of like our Paramount Presents titles and some of our sub-licensing titles, things like that.
You mentioned Paramount Presents. You had a big hand in that, did you not?
I did. That was it's been a really fun project. We, you know, quite frankly, came out of a sub-licensing deal with a lot of our titles kind of locked up, and we couldn't do them ourselves in home entertainment. And so one of the things that we wanted to test, really, the market on, was creating our own Criterion Collection or our own, you know, Shout Factory, and, you know, give it a line look, but also always promise something to the consumer. And so in the early days of that, we had all of these great remasters that had been done for 4K. At the time, it didn't make sense to bring them to 4K, or financial sense. Right. The model just wasn't there. The purchasing wasn't there. And so at the very least was to rectify some of the bad Blu-rays, frankly, that were out there of our biggest titles. So we went out with Blu-rays, and they were always remastered. They always had new special features. Eventually we shifted to always having digital copies, which is something, you know, some licensees don't do. Yeah, it's been amazing to see how the product has shifted to a 4K product, which is imperative, I think, in the marketplace now, and but still carrying this cohesive packaging that we like, you know, on our shelf,
right.
and offer up some really exciting things. And honestly, I think we're up to title 46 now that we're working on. Have not announced yet, but will be soon. And there is a lot more attention to bigger titles in this collection, rather than a lot more of the obscure ones that we put our foot in the water on in the past.
Interesting. Oh, I'm intrigued. I'm leaning forward in anticipation. You mentioned 4K, so let's go down that alley for a little bit, because 4K has become such a really important part of the marketplace, but it's also like it's a small part of the pie, but it feels like it's the loudest audience. They're the angriest. I feel like the 4K audience is the angriest.
Yeah, they're definitely the pickiest. It is still in its infancy as a format.
Yeah.
But given the general day-to-day of sales, it's still a challenging format. Mm-hmm. It's not the format that drives purchases, unfortunately, still. But there's also really kind of the grim reality that might be the final format, right? This may be it for physical, especially at least to be affordable to consumers. And though the technology may get there, it's very unlikely that it would be in a home entertainment sense. So 4K
let's chase that, because there are people, I hear this all the time, 8K is coming.
8K.
Wait, don't buy this on 4K, wait for 8K. I'm like, guys, 8K is not, there's not going to be an 8K disc format. Or
I don't think so, because, you know, look, with every format, the audience has shrunk, right? The novelty has gone away. And we live in a time of just instant access to so much on streaming and digital transactional. And the grim reality, as you know, is that that's still not the full catalog of titles that were available in physical. And there's so many titles that have been lost because of that. But I think 4K is pretty amazing to go out on, you know, as a final format. And the things that are being done with 4K now are well more advanced than when some of the first titles were coming out in 2016. So
What do you mean? Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah, I think there's just more of an understanding of how to really author discs and more respect around longer films being quote unquote vanilla on a disc so that it can pack as much information as possible for picture quality. And I'm in no way going to pretend I'm an expert in top tech, but I've appreciated that at least where I am, the standard is really, really high for picture quality and bit rate. And I mean, Titanic was an incredible release that couldn't have happened without the help of Lightstorm and the Disney team and our team and the archive team. So, you know, things like that. I mean, it's just an incredible time to be a 4K collector. Certain titles were rushed to 4K, just as certain titles were rushed to Blu-ray. So, you know, I think we could get to a point where titles are reauthored even on 4K if costs come down.
So, talking about catalog titles, when I see something, okay, here's an example right here. When I see the Tin Star from Arrow, you made the call on that. You're like, let's license certain things out to different departments. Is that correct?
I did, yes. I mean, there's a lot of folks that go through, it goes up through.
Sure,
Certainly, I
sure.
can't just say, hey, let's do
This part of
it.
what you
But
do, right? I mean, that's part of your.
when when I came in, I just realized that there were a lot of titles that weren't being exhibited on physical home entertainment. Tin Star is one that had a DVD, but I think at that point it was probably like out of print and moved into MOD. You know, a lot of titles go into the MOD service just because the demand is not as high, and the transfer probably was is just inferior in terms of capturing you know, the original film negative. So something like the Tin Star is not a title in particular that we had been working on, or potentially was a title that we had been working on, and just made more sense to give it the Arrow Films treatment and to sublicense it. And so we've worked with a lot of different sublicensees internationally to make sure that we have opportunities to get the title out there, but also that it's, you know, profitable for us as well. So it works out both ways.
You know, I do a lot of Kino Lorber coverage, and the Paramount presence, for lack of a better word, in every month of Kino Lorber releases is massive. And I just wanted to say thank you for putting catalog. Listen, because as a guy that loves the deep cuts, I mean, listen, we all come to movies through the mainstream. We all come through Titanic, right? But then later, you want the deep cuts. You want Tin Star and you want all these like 1935 movies that maybe have fallen off the radar. And the fact that those are being used, that they're being put out there, that they're being restored, and they're not being. The fear for a movie fan is that these movies die in a vault. Right. So
Yes,
that's
definitely.
not happening. And I want to thank you for
No.
that.
Oh, thanks. I mean, I can't take full credit for it because certainly it, you know, is part of making sure that the titles that are receiving like preservation transfers, there's the, you know, all the archival work that's done by Paramount internally is really astonishing. Anytime you see any of these releases from Kino Lorber or from Arrow or Vinegar Syndrome, you know, just know that they are involved with the process and they're approved vendors. And so that's very exciting to know that this movie was saved from only existing on sometimes VHS, you know, maybe even never in home entertainment before, finally making its way to a collector's shelf. And even though, and really doing something like that through Kino is the only way, quite frankly, you know, the economics of me releasing a title like Brain Donors, for example, you know, fun movie, really, you know, an interesting part of the Paramount story, and on so many levels. And I will be honest, I would love to do a Paramount Presents on something like, you know, on Brain Donors or you know, even more
Nobody was
obscure
expecting a
titles.
Brain Donors reference in this one.
No. And so I decided to try and think of the most obscure titles, and
That's
that's
a good
certainly
one, though.
one of
That's
them.
very
There's
obscure.
another one that they did that was really surprising to me called The Man Who Wasn't There. Oh no, is it The Man Who Wasn't There? Yeah, Man Who Wasn't There. Not the Coen Brothers film, but the 1983 Steve Guttenberg comedy shot in 3D, was at the very tail end of the second wave of 3D craze. And it's just this like really like crude 80s sex comedy. And you would never imagine that this thing would be restored. But with the 3D Film Archives relationship that Kino has, they were able to tackle that. And that's pretty astonishing.
Bob Furmanek and the team over the 3D Film Archive. Is that who you're talking about?
Yeah,
Yeah.
yes,
Love those
exactly.
guys.
And I believe they're working on a title right now. I think he's done a video about it. Maybe is it Money from Home? One of the Jerry Lewis films that was originally shot in 3D and not released in 3D. So they're doing a preservation back into 3D. It's very exciting. I like those are the kinds of things that are fun to work on. It's not something that is the bread and butter of Paramount Home Entertainment.
Right.
Obviously we have big things to focus on, certainly at any given moment. So
Well,
it's good
but
that
so
they're
let me
happening.
again kind of toot your horn because there are other, it's a concerning time right now for a lot of movie fans because studios are
Sure.
buying other studios and there's a lot of movies. There's a studio in particular that's letting a lot of movies sit in a vault and they're not out. They're not even, listen, a lot of them aren't even on digital. So the idea
Sure.
of movies disappearing is something that a lot of people are afraid of. And it makes
Yeah.
me feel good to know that you're walking the balance. You're like, okay, the big mainstream films that are going to sell, tens of thousands or 100,000 or more copies versus the smaller ones that the brain donors for that that's a
Sure.
very niche thing. It makes me feel good to know that both of those are being served.
Well, I would say that the marketplace has definitely created this opportunity for classic films to make their way to physical for the purpose of archive and collectors. It's not always driven by commerce, and the sub-licensees have a different economic model that can actually pull off doing, Kino has a great output of definitely over 10 titles a month. Sometimes from us, there could be four or five in any given month. And it's exciting to see, Kino, I believe, was the first to dip their toe into the 4K realm with big titles like Silence of the Lambs, for example. And we were a little hesitant to do those types of deals. But then, obviously, when Criterion is starting to put out 4K and the Vinegar Syndrome and Shout and everything, it's really kind of saving the home ad marketplace because it is becoming a collector's market. And that's exciting, I think, for us. We as a studio, we want to keep up with the competition a little bit and do it ourselves. We always take a deep breath and say, like, can we do this ourselves and do it better in some cases, which is a
Like
challenge. But
Chinatown, putting out Chinatown
yeah,
through Paramount and not
well,
through
there's no way
whoever.
that Chinatown is going to get sub-licensed, right? Like that's the kind of thing where like certain things happen with studios in terms of releasing bigger tentpole titles with sub-licensees. But that was one that we very much had to do ourselves. And the 50th anniversary, going back to the anniversary thing, is the best timing. And it did kill me to have to wait so long before we could release it.
So when people want to
Because
see if a
this
movie,
is one of those things, like it has been available in digital, certainly, for years. People can see the 4K streaming, and we didn't just sit on it. But for physical, we really got everything together. Everything really aligned well for the special features. Being able to include the two Jakes was very important to us, and so we're super excited that it's finally coming.
That was a great call too, to include the two Jakes, because that's a movie that I think has flown under the radar for a lot of people, and now they have no
Oh yeah,
excuse.
definitely.
Now they have to
Yeah,
watch it because
definitely.
they already have it.
It's certainly under the radar. We released it on Blu-ray during the pandemic, I want to say. We were releasing a lot of titles new to Blu-ray for the first time, and it was becoming a 4K marketplace. And Blu-rays are sort of in this limbo for general everyday purchase. So I was surprised that Two Jakes, was kind of landed softly, but it is more of a cult film, so it made sense to include it with this release.
I believe
Yeah.
I even heard that there was intention to do a third one of those, but it just never manifested.
Yeah, we actually have a special feature on there that briefly talks about the trilogy. The whole history of Los Angeles is really told through Chinatown, and Chinatown's about water. And it was to be about the different aspects of power and control of over the city. And so originally I believe it was even scripted as a trilogy. Event just didn't happen after Two Jakes.
You said something that I thought was interesting. You were talking about how the 4K transfer for Chinatown's been out digitally for a while, and I bought it. I have it. It's great to have that, to not have to wait for the disc. That's something I'm doing more and more as I evolve in my movie fandom, is realizing that digital is not necessarily the enemy of physical media. And a lot of the same people that are working on the physical media releases are also working on the digital releases. Can you comment at all on the interest that you might have in both physical and digital?
Yeah, as myself, I can. I do prefer to have the physical disc as a collector, and for picture quality especially, I see the difference. I don't think everybody does. I think the ownership of titles in the digital space is generally for the convenience of having it, on the go. But there is a more affordable way to distribute the titles, and that is digitally. It's sort of a as our my point of view, at least for what I do, is that if a title has is cleared to go live digitally for transactional, we need to get it live because it's part of the availability. Having more titles out in the marketplace. You'd be surprised. There are a lot of, I'm sure you've done videos on this in the past, really big titles from our childhood, especially, but even certainly classic cinema, golden age of Hollywood, that are not available at all, even on digital. And so those opportunities to finally bring them to digital come about very often. And a lot of it has to do with music clearance, original contracts that didn't define the home entertainment situation further than physical discs, and in some cases physical tape. So once that can all be rectified, we can bring the titles out and give you like examples. So we've brought hundreds and hundreds of titles out in the past 5 years alone from Paramount. One of them was My Fair Lady, Best Picture winner, had not been available until 2 years ago. Better Off Dead, amazing, cult classic 80s comedy. And we're currently working on Foul Play, which has only been available on physical media. We brought it to Blu-ray for the first time a couple years ago, but finally got the music cleared on that. So, it's still, I think the digital offerings are not as flashy, certainly, as having something with all the packaging and bells and whistles, and certainly picture quality, but it is pretty cool to see that catalog is being treated well in the digital space.
For me, I feel like it's everything. It all works together. A movie fan wants access to different things in different places, and I love that I can have Chinatown in 4K before I have the disc. I mean, that was great for me to be able to have that movie. Something that, listen, I'm going to ask this question. If you can't follow me here, then that's okay, but I want to ask it. People are saying to me fairly regularly, well, the studios want you to own nothing and be happy. They really think that there's a war between they think that there's a war between physical and digital, and I don't see that there is. I see that they're two
Well,
different markets.
I think you have to kind of define it digital as being either streaming or because I think the most of the noise is around streaming services, right? Things come on and off of streaming services all the time. When I say the word digital, I'm speaking specifically for EST or IVOD, buy or rent. And that falls into my group because that's home entertainment. Whereas streaming is something that's licensed out through more of a general traditional what used to be television, right? And yeah, there's no it's no secret that titles come in and out of many different services. So all the more reason to really to purchase your copy. In digital transactional, so you just at least know that you have it. But taking it the next step further with physical, You're right. I mean, the noises that studios may take this away from us, there certainly are examples of that happening, because there are things that are beyond anybody's control. I don't think there's any evil agenda, certainly, but it is unfortunate to the collector, the fan, because it generally comes off as bad business. And that's definitely not any kind of like evil, nefarious plan behind it in any way.
Yeah, I see a lot of confusion when this comes up because people will say, oh, but they think that digital transaction, or like buying something through Apple, what even is it now? It was iTunes, now it's Apple TV, I guess.
It's Apple TV, yeah, the Apple TV store. We also just had Vudu become Fandango at Home,
Fandango, yeah.
which honestly is an exciting thing, because Fandango, if you buy your tickets through Fandango, there's a lot more opportunity for you to redeem, your points with one big infrastructure. But it's all kind of interesting, because at the end of the day, that's owned by Universal, right? And Movies Anywhere is owned by Disney. So in many ways, everyone's working with one another to try to bring the best selection. But that's why you see so much competition out there, and different types of messaging. And
You just opened two doors I want to go down. The first
sure.
door is, you reminded me, Paramount codes don't redeem an Apple TV, right? Is that correct? Like the digital codes that come with stuff are specific to certain platforms, correct?
We do. We have some titles that are available on Apple, some titles that are available on Fandango at Home now. But either or sometimes both is the best way I can explain it.
We can't really get
There,
into it, right?
I can't really get into it, because it all has to do with deals and details of
Gotcha.
all that. But certainly it'd be awesome to in the digital space. I think that's one of the stumbling blocks, is really being able to offer one cohesive thing to the consumer, which exists in the physical sense. It's just the disc is compatible with anybody that has the hardware to play the disc, and that's the end of the story. And there's a nice security to the physical home entertainment
Yes.
product, as opposed to the digital. But that's not to say that it's I would say it's different with every studio, honestly. Lionsgate's different, Universal, Disney, and certainly Sony, Warner Brothers. They
It's one of
all are
those,
part of Movies Everywhere.
it's a frequently asked question, as is why are things still region locked in 2024? These are things that get asked a lot.
I know that we view things in terms of legalities, right? So what may not be apparent to the collector around a title, like, let's say, Chinatown is an example of a title that Paramount owns worldwide. So there are no issues around us creating a 4K disc that's playable worldwide. And certainly, Blu-ray is something that generally I think is region free and can play worldwide as well. It gets a lot trickier when it's a title that is like Major League, for example, is we only have the US and Canadian rights for Major League. So that's going to be region locked. And that's just playing fair, right, to any possible territories owned by another studio. It's always kind of tricky. I mean, with some of the sub licensees, I've noticed they don't region, lock some of the discs that are licensed. I won't name names, but they
We know who
are
they are.
probably, yeah, they're probably doing it honestly because it's such a small run of the disc, and it really doesn't impact us the same way that, say, like a Top Gun Maverick would, certainly.
The other thing that you brought to my mind, you were talking about studios cooperating on the digital sphere. I do you foresee a time when, see, when you said that, I thought about Universal and Warner Brothers with the studio distribution services thing. Do you foresee a time when maybe more studios will continue to work together to do projects that, I mean, I don't even know what that would look like, but as the market continues to change, do you see collaboration as a possibility in the future?
I think so. I mean, just know that there's a summit, right? There's a group that brings everybody together, and we just had a interesting meetup a couple months ago. I'm certainly in touch with all my colleagues at the studios, and whenever there's an opportunity to work together, we do. Especially when you have franchises that are spread across different studios, or you have split rights. Almost Famous is a great example of a title that, like, we worked with Sony very closely on because we had U.S. and we had domestic U.S. Canada, and then internationally they wanted to release, and it all came together as one great product at the end of the day. And those are big opportunities. I think outside of a title by title opportunity, it really depends on where the business is going. I think the only equalizer are the sub-licensees, where they can take product from other studios and put them into a cohesive, line look or feel, and that's very fun for film fans and collectors. But at the end of the day, you're talking about something that's curated versus something that is like a distribution strategy, and it remains to be seen. I have, your guess is as good as mine. As to that's like a big future of home entertainment kind of question.
Well, I am thinking about the future of home entertainment. I'm kind of curious what you think about the future, knowing you can't get into any details, but I'm just curious. People have
I
been
would.
predicting the death of physical media for about 20 years.
Yes, exactly. I mean, that's the thing, like there is always some sort of pessimism about anything, really. But in terms of physical media's death going on for 20 years, that is very much part of Blu-ray not being as big as DVD, and DVD not being as big as VHS, and you can throw in LaserDisc didn't work, and all these different things that were benchmarks to what home entertainment was, as opposed to viewing home entertainment as evolving to something different. And I think if anything, it will just evolve to something different. It's not going to go away. Certainly, companies that sublicense our product are devoted to doing it for both commerce and art. And hopefully the studios feel that there's enough of a juice from the squeeze of doing it that it'll continue as well. So, it's no secret Disney's out of the game now. But how exciting is it that Sony has jumped in and is potentially going to dive into the catalog and certainly handle a lot of the inventory, so that it just doesn't disappear completely. I think that's not an ideal evolution, certainly. I mean, I see your Disney Movie Club Blu-rays up there.
Oh, yeah.
I think that's a great example of something that, like, get them before they're gone, sort of thing, because that we at least had it for a little while. But who knows what the future could bring? Will it be will it be just a handful of, like, Kinos and Vinegar Syndromes and things like that that are doing product? Potentially. I mean, I think wherever there's a deal to bring things to physical home entertainment, it's still going to exist. There's definitely also this comparison to the vinyl comeback. And I don't think it's the same yet. I mean, it's possible that we could have physical media day in the future. That would be wonderful, and do special editions of classic releases, things like that. But it's sort of a, like, we didn't kill the home entertainment industry, right? Like, there's no the reason why vinyl is so big is because everything is subscription based streaming. There, Tower Records went away, music stores in general went away, and now the appeal of owning something in physical music certainly is vinyl or collector edition CDs and things of that nature that have been a growing consumer base. So I'm hoping that at least that's the evolution that we get to here in
You know what's interesting about that,
film.
about the vinyl comparison, is that half of all of the records that are sold to people that don't have a turntable and can't listen to them. So they're buying it as a tangible thing They'll listen to it on Spotify or whatever, but they'll buy it. And look, but it's supporting the artist, which is a good thing, and it's supporting the label or the company or the studio, whoever. So there's benefits to it, but it just makes me sad that the function of the thing is not being met. Maybe I should let that go. I don't know.
Oh, it's
So
even
it is.
sadder if they play it on a crappy, turntable, like Crosby or something
A
like that,
Crossley. Crossley,
right? Crosley, yeah. But I wonder also what the percentage of that purchase is at a concert, for example, because it's sold like merchandise, and there's certain areas, if it's sold at Urban Outfitters, like that kind of thing. Yes, there's kind of a kitsch, cool value to the vinyl, as opposed to us collectors that really appreciate the sound of vinyl, or that something got remastered from the analog tapes and has been pressed for a record store day. Like that's definitely a different consumer base, and that exists certainly in home entertainment as well.
I am seeing the kids, though, the youngins trying, they're starting to realize that they've lost a connection. I'm seeing YouTube videos about DVD menus. Like, hey, remember the DVD menu? We had this thing and now it's gone. There, people are realizing that when they've switched to just streaming, that they have lost something. And I think that that is starting to grow in popularity. I mean, every day, like at least a few times a week, there's an article or a YouTube video about the resurgence or the, here's why you do physical media. Here's why physical media matters.
Yeah, certainly. And we have certainly in Los Angeles, it's like a wealth of places you can go to purchase physical media, but it's exciting to see that pop up in different parts of the world. It, but I think in the general mass, the closing of Best Buy stores and the shrinking of space at other retailers is interpreted as being like the death of physical media, and it's hard not to interpret it that way,
Yeah, I mean,
certainly.
it's true. The death of brick and mortar, and I do think brick and mortar is taking a really big hit right now. It is being
In general.
equated. But they're not. We've just all it's all moved online, and there's so
It
much more
has,
choice.
which makes it interesting for physical home entertainment, because so much of the design of packaging or the kicking off new artwork, certainly steelbooks, for example, depend on the purchaser being able to see it before they buy it, right? And now we're in just a world of that not really being accessible for everybody if it's not on a shelf at Walmart or certainly at a specific retailer in someone's neighborhood. So for unboxing videos are our friends. We love when folks are doing that, and we love word of mouth, and we try to do the best beauty shots and pack shots and things like that, so folks know what they're getting. But there's a little bit of surprise and delight to it too, I would say. Like even for me, like we just got the Once Upon a Time in the West samples in, and it's like, oh, this is it's a crime this isn't on a shelf at Best Buy, but that's a whole other story.
One of the things I'm curious about is TV stuff. There's been, I know you don't necessarily, you work with catalog films, and I know
Yeah, I
TV is not necessarily your, would we say your bailiwick, but Paramount has released an Andy Griffith Show Blu-ray. They've released a that wonderful Mission Impossible box set, which I would like talk about
it's
good
so cool.
tie-in, because you get the movies that are coming out, and then you've got this great TV box set. I'm just curious how decisions are made. I did a video about the making of the Bonanza box set with someone that was involved with that, and I'll probably pop it up, a link to it right here. But one of the things that was talked about is how things are decided between DVD or Blu-ray, and maybe you could speak to this on a larger scale. Like, what are I know it's economics.
It's economics. It has to do one part with the accessible materials. What was the original source material? Is it available? What is the cost to do new scans, clean it up? That has to be weighed against comps in the world of other titles that are like it. And generally, especially with TV, DVD outsells Blu-ray. So in many cases, that has kept a lot of really great television series out of HD, out of being better than DVD. But the good news is that a lot of efforts to rectify that are being done for the streamers. You know, like if you go on Peacock, for example, you can see incredible HD quality Columbo and Murder, She Wrote, and those are being, you know, sub-licensed out to, you know, like, you know, whoever, certainly for physical media. But that wouldn't have happened if there wasn't really someone at the helm saying, we cannot put these on our new streaming service in SD. Like, it's just like we're going to bring people to bad quality stuff. So I would say, like, if you see something see something that's been restored like that for a streamer, there's probably more being done, you know, to bring it to physical, because it's more viable that way. And that's me speaking as a fan. Like, I've noticed that quite a bit on a lot of titles. And television especially is prickly with streaming. You know, it's there one day, it's not, and the whole, you know, season isn't there. It's just like one season, and, you know, willy-nilly. So having television on DVD on physical media certainly is even more important, I would say, than some of the film selections that happen.
What would you say to the person? Because there are going to be hundreds of people that just heard what you said, and they said, well, if they quit making DVD, everybody would have to buy Blu-ray. I don't think that that's true. I think if you cut out DVD, you lose a huge portion of the revenue that's coming in.
I would agree with that. You do still have a lot of home entertainment purchasing power coming through that format, and it is in some way a self-fulfilling prophecy, because it's never been brought to anything but DVD. But there really is not a large conversion from DVD to Blu-ray, and then Blu-ray to 4K. And until that changes, and until maybe there's that sort of evolution, it's just not going to happen. I think we've been very lucky to see a lot of great television on Blu-ray, certainly, and I would love to see certain things on 4K, personally. But even if it's an episode here
TV
or
on
there, you know.
4K? You'd like to see TV on 4K?
Oh, absolutely,
But
absolutely,
Todd, 8K is
yeah.
coming.
Well, you know, just speaking, like, you can imagine, like, something like Twilight Zone, or, you know,
Oh,
just
yeah.
there's so many great filmic television series from the golden age of television that would look amazing on 4K.
Well, a lot of the shows that I love, that I would love to see get upgraded, haven't even gotten to
Yeah.
Blu-ray yet. I want a Mannix. Give me Mannix on Blu-ray someday, please. The
Yeah,
Fugitive? How about The Fugitive? You know? What's it? Oh, Have
absolutely.
Gun Will Travel. I'm gonna just put that out into the universe and hope that it manifests at some point.
Yeah, no, it's definitely you're not alone in that. I've heard that many times, and certainly, usually I say, well, that's not my area, and forward you to the right person. But yeah, exactly.
Well, listen, I just want to say thank you so much for your time,
Yeah, of
for
course.
your good, open, honest answers. This is a real treat for me. And is there anything else
Awesome.
that we should talk about that you want to hit that we haven't covered?
Let's see. No, I'd just love to hear from you. Like, what are some of the things that you're excited about with what the studios are doing? Do you feel like it's even though that there's less product coming out, that the studios are respectful of certain catalog titles? I mean, is there at least one surprise every quarter, you know, of a catalog title that's coming out? We always hear the negative. We never hear the
There, well, there is
positive.
more coming out than anyone can even get to these days, which is it's literally an embarrassment of riches, which is a wonderful
That's a
problem to
good
have.
point. Yeah,
I
yeah.
mean, what you guys are doing, what I'm sorry, what Paramount is doing, what Universal's doing with
Yeah.
and not just the first party stuff, but also the third party stuff, the things that are going through the licensees. It really
Sure.
blows me away. I mean, I have my wildest dreams have come true over the last few years, and it just gets better
That's
and
great.
better. So
So you did a commentary track for Joysticks, I saw.
I did
That's exciting.
with Eric Wilkinson from MVD and
Oh, okay.
Jesse Nelson from Diabolic DVD. There's three of us
Nice.
on the track.
Oh, that's great. That's a great example of a title I never would have thought would get a special edition, let alone, you know, Blu-ray and, you know, restoration. And And honestly, those are the types of titles that, I think it's an MG. Who owns that title? I don't know if it
Oh, I'm
was
not
licensed from.
sure.
Yeah, but it's not something a studio would put out, in other words. So it's exciting to see. And I love the MVD line. I think it's really a lot of fun. Certainly surprising us with titles that you would never imagine would make their way to 4K. So,
That's what we live in right now. It's like the
yeah.
surprises every single month. And the things that are getting the la okay, I mean, case in point, I'll go back to the 10
Yeah.
star. Not only do we have this beautiful edition of the 10 star, but it's got lobby cards and a poster and
Yeah.
retrospective features. I mean, this is not something that's been on a possibility until the
Yeah.
last couple of years.
Do you think that that helps sell it into the collector, what we call in the business GWP, gift with purchase, the posters, the postcards, sometimes stickers, magnets, things like that?
I think the value added material is definitely a consideration because people will say, I don't want to buy this disc if it's bare bones. Knowing a lot
Yeah.
of them are never going to listen to the commentaries, they're never going to hang up those posters, but it's the idea of getting something extra for their money.
Yeah, that's fair. That makes sense. I think it's great to see that more of the sub-licensees are doing that, and that it's not just like a standard release, because it's super important. At least to have at the very least a commentary, trailer gallery, things like that.
Todd, thank you so much for being here. This was a blast. I really appreciate it. And I hope
Yeah,
that you'll come
thank
back at
you.
some point too.
Oh, absolutely. Cool. We'll talk just about movies.